Game Boys.
Hey there, Internet. Welcome to another episode of the GAMEBOIZ Game Boys Podcast. It's me, Lux. I'm your host. With me, as always, it's the man. He's back from Silicon Valley. It's Griffin Davis.
I'm back from Silicon Valley. That's right.
Yeah, how was Sketchfest, bud?
It was fun. It was good. The first show we played to a big crowd of eight people.
Sell out.
I don't know if they understood that we were doing sketch comedy.
Hell yeah. Love for people who go to Sketchfest and think it's about drawing.
And apparently the guys that went on right before us had like taken their dicks out on stage or something. And then we just like came, like, I didn't know that at the time. So
follow, honestly.
So we come up and we follow, and our first sketch is a dick sketch.
Oh, so, no!
It seemed like an unattended like assault on the audience. But yeah, it was fun. And then there was a great after party. They had a little experience bar is what they called it, and it was looked like a Westworld.
I knew if I asked you about that Sketchfest, something insanely douchey would come up, and we'd get to talk about it. And here it is. What's an experience bar?
It's all about experience bars.
All right, pitch me on this, bro.
Well, if you party up, you get group XP, and then it's basically just like every bar and pop up now has to be like a thing. It has to be a themed thing, you know. So it was like kind of going like a Westworld vibe, but then there was like a swing dancing room, and the band lead singer was SpongeBob SquarePants.
Things have taken a turn.
Yeah, so it was a jam. It was a good time, Lux. It was fun. I'm very tired. I sound like death. But Lux.
Well, my intrepid, exhausted friend. What have you been up to? What have I been up to? Getting ready for the next PWR show, mostly, and playing fucking Tales of Vesperia at every moment that I can get away from work or videos.
As we've said, you find a new JRPG when you're in times of crisis, and this is your new, this is my current salve.
Yeah, this is my current valve, and it's so good. It's cool. I like it because it's like, it sort of is split up into like three distinct arcs throughout this as the story goes on.
Oh man, sorry, Lux. I think I'm talking to the wrong side of my microphone. Let me turn it around.
You super are, actually. I can see that.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, it sounds so much better now.
Yeah, you sounded okay before, but things are improved.
Okay.
But, I'm playing Vesperia, and it's... Haley, please keep that in. I've been playing Vesperia. It's super good. It's insanely fun. And, yeah, like I said, it's split into, like, three arcs in this way where, like, you never really get tired of the overarching story, because each overarching story is only about 15 hours, but it comes out to about a 50-hour game. So, like, that's kind of nice that, like, it's, like, sometimes JRPGs, it's, like, you're playing 50 hours of the same story, and by, like, act three, you're just like, I fucking get it.
Yeah.
But this one breaks it up a little bit in a way that's a lot of fun.
That's great.
How about you, bud? Did you do any gaming while you were out in Sketchfest?
I sound very tired, Lux, but, you know, it's a big day because... Kingdom Hearts 3, baby. It's today. The day we've all been waiting for.
Griffin, you got so excited that you're peeking on the audio, so turn your game down if you're going to yell about Kingdom Hearts.
I definitely broke the audio right there.
You certainly did.
13 years, Lux.
Yeah, are you so excited?
I was just a wee 13-year-old boy when I completed the saga that was Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah. So are you so hyped for 3?
I'm very excited. I had a counter. The TV went to sleep, but I had a counter on with the time counting down until 9 p.m. PST, when I can just turn that puppy on.
Are you like pre-downloaded it and stuff?
Oh, it's pre-DL'd. It's great.
It's like locked and loaded. At 9 p.m. exactly, you're going to roll it over and boot that baby up.
Mm-hmm. And I've got friend of the show and former podcast episode Gregory Borderlon coming over to experience the beginning with me.
Wow. You know,
so
a real moment to share with friends, booting up a single player JRPG. Such a great communal experience for everyone. I recently learned, speaking of single player JRPGs, that Vesperia has co-op. And the way I learned this was classically stupid. I was trying to switch which of the characters my party I controlled, because it's a real time fighting engine. And I kept turning all of them off, so none of them would fight, and I kept getting killed. But eventually I turned them all manual, so I controlled one, and then the other three were synced to controllers that didn't exist. So it turns out you can play 4-player Tales of Vesperia, where each person controls one of the fighters in the party.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Now, Now, if there's that same kind of feature where you can play Donald Duck or Goofy in Kingdom Hearts 3, that would be much appreciated.
Yeah.
I think that'd be good.
If we get online co-op Kingdom Hearts 3, I'll play all of you Donald Duck. Because similarly, I almost never wear pants.
Wow. Pants reminds me of the game that we have picked today by our lovely guest. So I think we should introduce him to the podcast. He is a sketch comedian. He is a passionate video game fan. Welcome to the podcast, Roger Carnot.
Hey, what's up?
What up, dude?
Roger Carnot.
Carnot?
Yeah.
Carnot?
Carnot.
Carnot.
Yeah.
Carnot.
Nice.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, what's going on, man?
This is a hard day to... the pressure is on me today. Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out. Mm-hmm. This episode is following the Final Fantasy VII episode.
Sure.
Oof.
I'm barely paying attention right now. Yeah.
Griffin's basically dead. I'm fine. So that's good. I got a good night's sleep last night.
I'll be peeking the audio this entire time, but with videos I'm playing off my phone.
You can bring your game down a little bit if you want, you know, just throwing that out there as a potential solution to the problem.
And here we go. Hey, the game is down.
There you go. You already sound better. Yeah, man. Well, thanks for making time and thanks for being brave enough to follow Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, if I had known, I could have done Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core.
Whoa.
The PSP game. Yeah, yeah.
And then we could have just been a Final Fantasy VII podcast.
Right.
And, and then I finally would have won the war. The great war for the heart of our audience.
It's okay. Quick aside, your thoughts on Advent Children, Final Fantasy Advent Children, straight to DVD film.
I never watched that, but I saw the Final Fantasy movie, Spirits Within.
Mm.
That one had a theatrical release. I don't remember a single thing about that movie.
Sure.
Except like the way it looks vaguely.
Okay. Well, we'll have to pop that in after this podcast.
Yeah.
Pop that baby in. Just throw it on the old VHS machine.
What's it? Do you guys remember the story of that? What was the story of that?
Of Advent Children?
Spirits Within.
It could not matter less. They're all the same.
It was like they were these people and they had spaceships.
Yeah.
And on the planet they were going to, they had basically materia, but they called them something else. And they were going to collect them, but some people were like doing it because of good reasons, but some people were doing it because of bad money reasons, and they didn't care about the planet.
Uh-huh.
That's basically it. I saw it with my dad in the theater, and I haven't thought about it or seen it since then.
I think I saw it with my dad, too. Oh, my God. I feel so bad for all the dads that had to watch that movie.
Oh, it was my dad's idea. He loves that shit. He's a big old he's a big fucking nerd.
Very unique case with your father.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast. Shouts out to Rabbi Jack Luxemburg.
Roger, I was mentioning Kingdom Hearts, and you said that your students have been talking about it. I'm a high school tennis coach.
Wow. Yeah, I coach high school tennis at my old high school. Yeah, so the kids are like 7 to 11 years younger this year. Last year was my first year, that, you know, 6 to 10 years younger. And yeah, a lot of them had played Kingdom Hearts and like Final Fantasy X and whatever. It's like stuff that I played when I was a kid. It's just like really interesting to me, like to see what still
lives on.
Yeah, exactly. Like
in Kingdom Hearts is one of them, baby.
Well, I feel like those are definitely Kingdom Hearts especially, but I think Final Fantasy X falls in this category too, are games that like people who are our age and a little bit older probably played as kids and showed like their kids and stuff.
Yeah.
In a way that makes them like the kind of really good intro level games for like kids of that age. Like they're the kind of games like you'd play with your parents or whatever. Like, I'm sure there are other people who are taught how to read by video games, and I'm sure the games they learn how to read from are, like, Kingdom Hearts and shit, the way that I learned from, like, Betrayal at Krondor and stuff.
I definitely got better at reading because I wanted to play Final Fantasy VII and VIII, because my older brother would play those. I just wanted to be able to read it in time, like, because I would read too slow, yeah. And it's like
your type to learn.
Oh, and I got better at typing from, like, flirting with a girl on AIM who I had met on Monster Hunter.
Bango tango.
That's how you do
it. My words per minute are very high.
Where'd y'all meet? Monster Hunter. I got really good at typing by being in World of Warcraft, and like the need to communicate with strangers is like a really key utility skill that you like had to get better and faster at typing. And then, you know, after a few, you know,
few years of World of Warcraft, you know, I was blazing at like 120 words per minute in them forums.
Yeah, yeah. I got fast at typing because my middle school had Mavis Beacon teaches typing. They had a high scoreboard and I was like, no one else is getting that top spot.
So the typing itself was the game to you.
Yeah. Well, they made, yeah, they had, yeah, a game that like rewarded you for being good at typing. And I was like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm the best at all video games. Doesn't matter what the mechanic is, so I'm going, yeah, to win this, and that's all I got good at typing. Thank you, DC Public Schools, for the one thing you taught me effectively.
So I am still interested about these kids and these schools, yeah, a little bit, you know, because we don't get a lot of takes from that generation.
I just want to say, Griffin, you said these kids and these schools, so they were ideas you've never heard of. You're like, these kids and these, I don't know what are they?
Yeah, what do they have in schools? Yeah,
they're like, what? So you hang out with small goats then.
I thought schools were kind of passe at this point.
Well, they're mostly for fish.
But so other than Kingdom Hearts, which was, you know, obviously, yeah, going to be a still thing, what other big things are there with the kids that you hear about on the streets these days? What are the games they care about?
So I was actually on campus every day last spring, and that starts again literally tomorrow for me. So I haven't been there like every day for a year. So this is all about a year old. But what was like the biggest online game last year?
Fortnite.
Yes. All the kids were on Fortnite. Oh, yeah.
Are they all those kids doing the backpack kid dance all the time?
I don't think any of them were doing like the floss dance. And I think that for sure, I've spoken to kids recently and they think that's like lame now.
Cool. Good. We talked about this on the show that I was like very traumatized by seeing a sad child do the backpack kid dance outside an H&M in New York recently. And so I'm glad that's sort of fading out because that was really rough to look at.
It was rough. It ruined my whole day.
Yeah. We talked on the podcast and then Griffin just cried instead of going out for New Year's, which I also did, but that's my normal thing. So I mean, it's dope that you have this connection to kids playing video games. Do you find that, like, do you ever, or have you ever, like, had a kid be like, this is a game that I think is cool, and you're like, I haven't heard of that, and you've, like, Googled it and been like, oh, I think this game is cool, and then played it?
No, they all want me to play Fortnite, and I'm like, no. Like, yeah. That's for you guys to play. Like, I have no interest, and, like, I want you guys to bond without me. Sure. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you are an instructor in tennis. Where do you fall with tennis video games?
Oh, okay. Virtua Tennis for the PSP might be one of the games I've played the most in my life.
Okay.
Because there were maybe 4 years where I'd play it every time I pooped. So, and I would just like...
So like 6-8 hours a day.
I would definitely like...
High fiber guy.
I would play an entire match... and not leave the restroom. I got really good at that game. Like, they could be on like the hardest level and I would win 6-0 without them winning a single point. That game was like the fun one to me because, like, you could, you know, play it was all about like beating them through angles because neither computer was gonna miss the ball ever. So that, you know, it was just like a fun like exercise and like perfecting like the angles of a court. And then, I don't know, I've played like Wii Tennis and a few other ones, but Virtua Tennis for the PSP was like the one that really got me.
Have you played Mario Tennis Aces yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. That's my favorite tennis game because I'm not good at tennis games, but Mario Tennis is pretty fun.
Okay, but now, isn't that the one where the where the tennis rackets have like weapon durability and like break?
Yeah. What's your point? It's the best one.
How often do tennis rackets break?
I've probably like broken 3 or 4 rackets in my life.
Okay. Well, I hear that they like break in this game two or three times a match.
Not if you time your blocks right. If you time your blocks right, your racket never breaks.
Imagine if that was like true in the real world and it was like the most expensive rich person sport to play just simply because you had to just burn through rackets like every couple minutes.
Because the two ways you could win is by points or by destroying the other person's racket by hitting the ball super hard. Yeah, totally. I mean, then I'd probably play more tennis.
The people that actually smash rackets are like people that are sponsored and get free rackets.
Yeah.
Which like a sponsor would hate it if they found out you were just smashing rackets.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, my name's Derek. I'm sponsored by Racket Corp. And here's my my prank video where I'm going to break 36 rackets in half. And they'll pay me back for them. It's going to be great. So, Roger, you talked about tennis video games, but is that how you got into video games, like playing tennis games?
Oh, no.
Or how did it start?
No, I played video games way before I ever played tennis. I the first video game I played was some game for the Sega Genesis where you shoot slime. I can look it up.
Some kind of slime shoot in Sega Genesis game.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I had an older brother who was 6 years older than me.
Oh, me too.
So, yeah, so I had... I remember playing, like, that and, like, Mortal Kombat when I was 3 on Sega Genesis. Sonic and Knuckles.
Sure, hell yeah.
Which is, like, the one, yeah, where there's a cartridge that you had to plug into a second cartridge.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, stack it on top of each other. Yeah, no, I had a bunch of consoles growing up, and I think I even got into, like, writing... because I wanted to write for video games in, like, first, second grade.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a lot of... We were talking about... Actually, second podcast in a row that we'll shout out friend of the pod, Jared Bauer, but he messaged me after the last podcast and was like, when you guys were talking about learning to write because he wanted, like, because a fan of Final Fantasy VII and wanting to write about video games, like, me too. And we've had a couple other people mention that after the Final Fantasy episode. So it's cool to hear that that's, like, a pretty pervasive thing amongst people.
Yeah, I remember in, like, second grade writing a story for class, and I titled it, like, Final Fantasy 24, because I was like, okay, by the time I'm 30, like, this certainly will go that far.
I'm going to nail this right, like, perfectly on the timeline. Yeah. I'm gonna blow up right when it's that
It'll
one.
It'll be so crazy when Final Fantasy 24 comes out, and you're, like, second grade English teacher posts the short story, and is like, my student knew all the secrets, and it goes super viral.
All 10 vocabulary words in the story.
Yeah, no, exactly. The Square Enix people are like, well, we had to get office in there because that's a hard one to spell. It's a good vocab word. So that's why we said it in the city.
That's why the character's name is Office.
That feels like it would be you'd fail the vocab test because you're not actually using office in a sentence.
Mr. Christopher, if you're listening to this, he was my second and fourth grade teacher. Every Thursday we had to like write a short story in both of those grades where we had to put all 10 vocab words in. Second grade, I'd spend like 3-4 hours writing it because I like really cared. I would like get up on my couch and pretend to like swing swords and stuff, like just pretending to like be the character. They were all like sword guys. Like they may as well have been like named sword guy. But then in fourth grade, I realized he didn't read any of these, so I named all the characters first name vocab word, middle name vocab word, last name vocab word. So it'd just be like, you know, autobiography is like their middle name.
Hi, my name's Aqueduct Concrete Vitamix.
A Vitamix, that was a big one, fourth grade.
No, I know. Well, they want you to know how to navigate a kitchen so you don't hurt yourself, and children are fucking stupid.
These will be around forever.
Yeah, they're never going to not have a Vitamix. So you got just playing early. What, like, I mean, I know we're going to talk about a game today, but are there any other games that, like, stuck out to you as, like, big reasons why video games, like, stuck with you as a hobby or, like, as a pastime?
Yeah, because you're not playing video games currently, right?
Right,
like, more like you kind of had your big hits in the past.
Yeah, I played video games, like, my whole life from, you know, age of 3 through high school and then stopped. Just in college, I was like, I think it's just like inferiority complex being in like a film school and everyone had seen everything and I had seen nothing. I knew I wanted to write for TV, but, you know, I had watched like 4 TV shows.
I hate that. I hate when everyone's seen everything. Yeah. That's just the worst. Guys, see a little less.
Can we all watch less, please?
It sounds like we're 3 film school people who all didn't watch the stuff before they got to film school. And let me tell you, it's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You don't have to watch the stuff.
It is fine. And you can watch the stuff, but take it easy. Yeah. Like, you've been watching other stuff.
Yeah.
But they haven't been.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, sometimes you can sneakily convince them that if you write about video games for your thesis, that's fine.
Is that what you did?
Yeah, it's exactly what I did. I read about Mass Effect 3 for my honors thesis in college.
How'd it go?
100% successful. I won an award and everything.
God damn it. We've talked about this before.
My point is that I think it's worth noting that inferiority complex is a real thing. And it's like, you don't have to see all the stuff. You can see the stuff you like and then learn how to talk about it.
That actually might actually be the most relatable thing we've said to our audience.
This is the first time I've actually said something useful to people. So I'm trying to like really lean into it.
Did we just do something good?
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. So you stopped there and then you just haven't really picked up games really since film school.
Right. Yeah. But growing up, like, the games that really made a difference to me were Final Fantasy 7, 8, 10, Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2. Let's see. I almost did Jet Grind Radio for this.
Oh, fuck yeah. What a good game.
Yeah.
Wait, is it Jet Set Radio or Jet Grind?
Jet Grind Radio is the first game. Jet Set Radio Future is the second game.
Yeah, I think it was like, because I looked this up and it's like, I think even re-releases of Jet Grind Radio were called Jet Set Radio?
I think so. I think when they did, because they released the sequel on the Xbox, and I think they re-released Jet Grind Radio as Jet Set Radio on the Xbox as a remaster.
Yeah, well, I played it on Dreamcast, and it was, Jet Grind Radio. Yeah, Dreamcast, like, okay, like a bunch of Dreamcast games, like, still stick with me.
Yeah, I think about Power Stone, like, almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever played that game. That weird, what was it? Power Stone.
Mm-mm.
It was like a 3D fighting game, and every character was really goofy, and it had the same kind of like weird, like, this guy's from China, so he has like a China hat kind of style as Tekken, except like way cartoonier and sillier.
Yeah.
And you was fucking ruled.
Have, like, if you look at it now, and China man with China hat, that can't look good.
It only holds up because of how stupid their way of doing it was. They were like, this guy's from Egypt, so he's definitely a mummy. Okay. Or like, this pirate man from the ocean is also a praying mantis. Sure, why not? Okay.
Mummy and ocean man sound a little less racist than the Chinese guy.
Yeah, the Chinese guy was their worst look for sure.
For sure. But, I know. I played Soul Calibur. I remember that Dreamcast. And I'm not a big, like, fighting game fan.
But eventually you got a PlayStation 1, correct?
Yes.
For the game that we're about to talk about.
Let's do it.
Because you gotta have it.
And I think it's interesting. Did you, before we talk about this game, was this a game that you, was this one of the first games for PlayStation 1 for you, or?
I don't.
What are your PlayStation 1
Okay, my PlayStation
hits?
1 games? Ape Escape, the Final Fantasy games. I vividly remember playing a Beyblade game. I know that was the last game I played for PlayStation 1.
Before you threw it out the window.
Why did you let this happen?
Hey, shouts out to my friend Alex Hood, voice of Kenny on Beyblade.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah,
get that guy on here.
Also, the brain on Arthur. Oh, yeah, we should do that. I'll message him after this.
But anyways, regardless, you know, it's good that you can't think of any more, and that, because that means that you picked something that's true to your heart. And so I think before we talk about it, we should hear a little bit of history about this game. In the late 90s, game developer SCE Japan Studio was working on the concept for a game that revolved around capturing time-traveling monkeys. A few months into development, Sony brought them into a super-secret testing facility where they were shown something that would change gaming forever, the DualShock Analog Controller. The developers saw the potential for a game that could be controlled by two analog joysticks and remapped their entire game around the feature, becoming the first video game to require the use of DualShock for gameplay. The game released a critical and commercial success, and to this day is considered one of the heavyweights of the PlayStation 1. This week on Game Boys, may God have mercy on our souls, for the apes have escaped, but at least they're wearing pants. It's Ape Escape.
This was a rad pick. This game fucking rules. Why was this the game that you chose to come on a podcast and talk about one video game?
Okay, I remember the images that I remember from the game are like inside the space station and on like the snowy mountain where there's like monkeys, like with the hot springs. Like, I think that might have been my introduction to like that little bit of Japanese iconography, like snow monkeys.
No snow monkeys out here.
Yeah, not
no
in
snow
LA.
Monkeys. No. When I have friends that go to Japan, like in the winter months, the first thing I ask is, did you see a snow monkey? And I get very jealous when they say yes.
And it's a yes every time.
Oh,
they
yeah.
say it's a huge problem over there.
You're like, I couldn't even see any snow. I was seeing so many monkeys. It's like, oh my God.
It's really hard to tell if it's snowing or not because there's just writhing masses of monkeys.
Yeah, I'm blinded by these monkeys.
But yeah, I remember it being like the perfect mix of like platformer and like hack and slash, in that you're like swinging a sword around. Again, I like those sword guys. I remember the right stick.
Well, we love a good sword.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's part of a gun, we're even happier.
Yeah, this is a real pro gun sword blade respecting ass podcast. So feel no shame in repping for the sword guys.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay, I will only talk about Ape Escape after this sentence, but in Final Fantasy VIII, I loved pulling the trigger like at the same time that you'd hit someone, because like Squall had the gun blade or whatever.
Hell yeah, Squall, that gun sword.
And that's really important. I think without that gun blade, they wouldn't have made it.
No.
No, they wouldn't have made it out of all those situations.
Back to Ape Escape. Just like,
so yeah, you remember it just being like a game that grabbed you on like multiple levels. So let's talk a little bit about the story of this game for a second here. So we explain in like a sentence or two, what is the story of this game?
Okay. It's weirdly similar to Kingdom Hearts.
Okay, I'm listening.
Good luck.
So this evil monkey has got a helmet that gives him like powers.
Sure.
And then he releases all the monkeys out of Monkey Park and gives them helmets, and then goes to the professor's science lab, sends all these monkeys through time.
Sure.
And then...
so that you can monkify everything, right?
Well, so then the kids have to go to the professor's lab, also go back in time and capture these monkeys with a butterfly net. Where it's similar to Kingdom Hearts is like the main guy, whose name is Spike. Spike basically looks like Sora. He's got red spiky hair and his friend
clown shoes.
Uh-huh. And his friend, except it looks like a Final Fantasy VII rendering of Sora. And then his friend Jake has blue hair, is captured by the bad guy, gets brainwashed into becoming a bad guy.
Riku.
It's exactly Riku like
all over again.
It feels exactly like Riku Maleficent, but this game came out in 1999 before Kingdom Hearts.
Wow. That sounds like Griffin's favorite game is some backbiting ass copycat shit.
I'm gripping the table just furiously.
Griffin's
right now
quaking, and I can see cracks spreading across his wooden table from how hard he's squeezing it.
Yeah, the story has to be the least important part of this game.
Right. The story's just like a series of like procedural sentences that get you to the point where you chase monkeys with a net.
Yeah. And the sentences themselves are like, this guy is evil.
Yeah.
You have to go stop him.
Yeah, it's pretty basic. Yeah, but the character, but the characters look unique and they're fun, and I really love all the monkeys because you catch them and you get little descriptions about them. And so it's just like a fun, simple format. But it seems like there's like little details to it that make it fun.
Well, it's also like it's a fun. It's like you said, it combines a lot of different mechanical stuff. Like there's puzzle elements, there's platformer elements, there's fighting elements. Like, and there's also these like cool dual stick mechanics. And so like, it really is, to go back to your experience bar, like it is really just about playing the game. Like it's not one of those games that like rewards you any more than just how fun it is to play. Like it's not like a Final Fantasy VII where it's like fun to play and also like makes you think and also is like all this beautiful art that like changes the way, blah, blah, blah. It's just like a game that's like, this is going to be super duper fun. And here, it's super duper fun, and it extremely is.
The less you think, the better with this game, because there's like spaceships and dinosaurs, maybe at the same time. Like, like I don't know if the UFOs also travel in time. Maybe those are different levels, but yeah, it's pretty wild. Like the story, I remember there's a line where like
they explain time travel really well. Is what you're trying to say?
That one of the kids is like, wow, like we could travel in time. Like, I'm so excited to see the dinosaurs and the future.
Yeah. I do have to. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the voice acting, because that is, it's pretty stilted.
Yeah. It's maybe the worst voice acting I've ever heard. Yeah, but it's like, I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
The same it's way funny. That there are like those animes that I like that are extremely dumb and the voice acting's terrible, but I still like love them because they're just like silly, goofy fun. Like, the one about that kid who loves to make bread, Yakitate Japan. Like, this is like in that vein where like the voice acting's bad in a way that complements how silly and goofy everything is. Like, it's just so, this game is like 100% mechanics. Like everything else is just stuff on top of mechanics.
Yeah, you're right. It does. It should be stupid. And I think it's purposeful. And the game's name is Ape Escape. So you know what you're getting.
Yeah, like, that's the thing.
You get what you get. Like, that's the whole vibe. It's just like, oh no, the apes.
The apes have escaped. And like, that even applies what you need to do, which is get them back. The whole story is basically just the phrase Ape Escape with an exclamation point at the end.
Imagine if they made like a gritty remaster now where it's like you have like a tiny ape daughter and you have to get her through like a violent land and capture all the apes. It's like a dad-daughter relationship.
No, exactly.
Yeah,
it's like
Taken, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the apes escaped. In the escape, they killed your wife. there are only like six bastions of like human civilization left amongst the apes, and you have to get from one that just collapsed to the other, and on the way you need to capture some apes for like science.
Yeah, if it was more nuanced, it would suck. So I think it's the right level. Yeah,
did you hear the thing I just described? That sounds terrible. Like the dumb, goofy, like barely plotted version where you're like, yeah, we were like in a spaceship and then like going to a castle and then like dinosaurs are around. Like that's the fucking Like, lean in. We say this all the time on this fucking show, but just, like, lean into the weird aesthetic of the game, and it's going to be fucking good. And this is another example of just a game, like, leans into, like, the weird shit it sets up, and, like, it totally succeeds in that respect.
And just like Kingdom Hearts, sometimes it's not about the plot. It's about the feelings.
Yeah, that's true. It has that. This is all that. That's what I'm saying. This is exclusively that. This is no...
But we have to ask you a question now, which we ask all of our guests. How do them sticks feel?
Oh, baby, I like them sticks. The right stick, I'm a huge right stick boy, because I told you I played Monster Hunter, too.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and Ape Escape was my first, like, I think it was the first game to use both sticks. What I missed about the PSP was, like, it only had the one joystick.
Oh, yeah.
That really frustrated me. That's why I didn't buy, like, Monster Hunter for PSP.
It was weird, that one little joystick, that little prong thing.
It was also so weird. Right. It was also weird because it was so low to the machine. Like, there wasn't a lot of space between the top of it and, like, the things. So you just kind of, like, pushed it around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
did not love it.
I liked it more than like a Game Boy controller when I was a kid. Like,
I just remember that the PSP felt like it had quality of life improvements from like the Game Boy. Like, the PSP felt like a real fucking piece of technology, and the Game Boy was like you could barely see it, like if the lights were too dark.
Yeah, well, like, that's just, we talked about this before. Like, the Game Gear was more like the PSP than anything that Game Boy did between like their answer to Game Gear and their release of the PSP. Like, the Game Gear was like full color, just looked like you were playing Sonic on your TV. It just also took like 8 batteries and ran out in like 45 minutes.
So basically the control of these sticks is like you move around with the left stick.
Yeah.
And then the right stick is not how you move the camera like in modern normal games. It's like how you swing your gadget.
Yeah, yeah. So you could use like your sword, or I think it might actually be like a club, a stun club or whatever.
You have a sword. You have a weird little sword.
I think,
I guess it's technically, maybe it's technically a club. The render does not make it clear.
Yeah.
I think because you're just trying to capture the monkeys, not like kill them. Yeah. It's like a stun club.
It looks so much like a lightsaber.
Oh, it does. Yeah. It might have been like just copyright. Like, oh yeah, we can't have it be a lightsaber. No, technically that's a club. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can swing around your stun club, your time net,
there's a radar, and you can pull that radar up and direct to different directions to, like, find monkeys and stuff like that.
What I struggled with as a kid, but is very cool now that I think about it, is, like, using the RC remote control car with your right stick and then running around with your left stick. Mm. So you could control, like, two characters, essentially, like, at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it turned out to be, like, a fun way to, like, do this kind of, like, platformer. Now, basically... It's interesting because, like, the game drops you in a level and you have to catch the minimum amount of monkeys in the level through just, like, figuring out the platforming challenges in the level. Now, to, like, 100% of the game, you have to, like, find all of the monkeys in the level, you know, the optional monkeys and stuff, which, of course, you know, we got to find all those monkeys, guys. My gripe with the game is that the second you get the minimum amount of monkeys, it ports you out of the level.
Yeah.
So basically, it requires you to, like, do the whole level over again twice, which is just, like, not fun.
It seemed like there were changes. I was watching the playthrough. Obviously, the biggest change, like, once you beat the game the first time, you... basically swap out your stun club, which you could still use for this, like, for boxing glove. It's a boxing glove on, like, a spring.
Oh, yes. Like the Joker.
Yeah. And then it seemed like there were different, like, monsters and stuff. And, like, maybe, like, the playthrough I was watching, like, the guy just explored different parts of the level. But I'm really impressed with the worlds in this game. The worlds in this game are very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, here, I wrote down what it reminded me of. It was kind of like a mix of, like, Mario 64 with some, like, Zelda and Sonic, like, aesthetic in there. A lot of, like, Japanese landscapes and iconography in there.
Definitely a lot of Sonic landscaping, for sure. And I really do like, I mean, obviously it's, like, really low polygon technology back then in the 90s. But I think in the same way that last episode we talked about how, like, the weird way that, like, Cloud looks in the Final Fantasy game feels like part of the game and not just, like... It feels like they, like, make the budget part of the game, and they make those characters' models look interesting and, like, part of the game. And that's the same thing with these. Like, these monkeys, like, even, like, these monkeys now, they're, like, super cute and, like, interesting. I don't know. They're, like, a fun, iconic piece of art that, like, if you look back at the PlayStation era, that weird little monkey head is just, like, all over the place.
Yeah. Oh, it's so charming. Like, if it came out now, like, would they look scary? Would they look like super monkey ball monkeys? Like, yeah, I don't really know.
Would it
know.
Even be, like, cute, just too cutesy? Like, what would they, I don't get, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was the perfect mix. Like, all those games from childhood, like, Banjo-Kazooie is another one that's kind of, like, similar. Like, they're just so charming to me. Like, and maybe it's nostalgia that's saying that, but, like, yeah, the aesthetic is... It's just so delightful. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fucking cool. I really liked back, and we talked about this a little bit on the show before too, like the so many old games, because there wasn't a way to make them like photorealistic, or like there was no way to like approach sort of an industry standard of good graphics, just tried to make the graphics and style that fit the thing they were doing. And I like that so much more design wise than so many games that come out now. Like so many games that come out now just have like a very clear, like, generally accepted version of like what a good game looks like and just try to look like that. And it's like, not every game needs to look like Uncharted 4. Right. Sorry, Cash, but it's true.
Sorry, Cash, you made a bad game.
No, he didn't make it. He just thought of it and invented it and designed it. Yeah.
Even with that company, they did Jack and Daxter games, right?
I think so. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, like Jack 2 and 3, like I thought
when
were so,
when will someone
so
bring
fun.
Me a Jack and Daxter? I wonder.
Griffin's sitting at the bar. What are you, the lady comes up, what are you drinking? He's like, Jack and Daxter.
And she's just
she's like what? And she's like, what? And then Griffin pours a glass full of console cartridges into his mouth. Man, so this game, like, one thing with this game is just that, like, it doesn't really care, like, It basically, all the design is premised off of the ideas of like, wouldn't it be funny if a monkey were in this place or in that place? Like, that's the organizing principle of the game. Like, wouldn't it be funny if a monkey were in a castle? What if it were near a dinosaur or in Tokyo or outer space?
Yeah.
And I fucking,
yeah,
they're mischief creatures.
Yeah. I think that that's such a good way for this game to be organized. And it's so fucking funny. And it, like, I don't know. I really love this game. This was really fun because I hadn't played this game or thought about this game in a long, long time. In fact, I was more of a Nintendo than PlayStation kid, so I played a lot more Super Monkey Ball than Ape Escape. Uh-huh. But when it comes to my my weird primate puzzle game of choice, but like rewatching, like watching playthroughs this week and like playing it a little bit, or playing other newer ones a little bit. It's just like so cool. It's such a cool, fun, weird, little, adorable game that like. It's so just about the act of playing it. Like it is so much less than it's like, which is fine. And I think that's a great thing for games to be sometimes. And it was just a cool reminder of like how fun those kind of games can be. I was really fucking into it. I really like this game a lot.
Yeah. Me too. It's like things I liked about Super, it feels like a very postmodern game. Like it's like, it feels like it's six of my favorite games mashed into one.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That's like a really good way of putting it.
Super Mario 64. Like what if it was like that, but you had a sword and it was like in a Shinto shrine that when you cross into a different room, it's also a volcano.
Like, yeah. And then also like it has some like Ratchet and Clank Banjo-Kazooie elements of like using yeah. weird mechanics and toys to solve puzzles.
And coming back to areas later once you have more gadgets and stuff, which
yeah.
is
I
the
do,
best.
I do think that actually leads to one of my main gripes of the game is I think that a lot of the puzzle solving mechanics are a little linear. Like we've talked about this in this game before on the show before that like, I like when a game is like, you've earned this tool with you can solve puzzles, but then it's just like, then you just get the same kind of puzzle over and over again. You know the tool for it. And yeah. there's not a lot of space where you like use the tools in creative ways to find new ways to solve puzzles or combine them in interesting ways is not a big right. part of this game, which is always, which is like a little bit frustrating to me. I know that's like, it's a game for children. So like,
yeah, I'm very glad I played it in third grade.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like you as an adult, can be like, that's like one of the things that just bums me out is that like, there's such cool stuff in it, but the puzzles are never quite as like, I don't know. I just don't, I only played a little bit of the remaster of 2, but like it never made me feel like some puzzle games like The Witness, for instance, made me feel like I'm a fucking genius. Like I did it.
Yeah. And that's just the tough thing about the kid puzzle stuff, man. It's like even Ratchet and Clank is pretty basic. Once you get a new gadget, it's like, OK, just do the gadget in this room, then do the gadget in the next room. You got a new gadget. Great. Like they don't really like layer the puzzles too much with that game either, because for kids at the end of the day.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like this, a 10-year-old will never make it through The Witness, and if they did, they are going to be a super villain.
Yeah, for sure. This is a thought I just had scrolling through the Ape Escape wiki. Do you think that the professor who's captured all of these apes in the first place is the same doctor who declared that there's no more monkeys jumping on the bed? I was thinking about that. Well, I was I was having a hard time reading the wiki because I kept thinking about that.
I think that is definitely true. And I think also something interesting about this game is, aren't we all kind of on the ape side?
I think in 2018, we're definitely on the ape side. I think in 1999, it was a little easier to be like, things are okay. We got to get these apes back. But now you're like, what are they escaping from? Who did these apes wrong?
And it's like, are they just being tested on in a lab facility? Like, I prefer them to just travel through time.
Well, I think maybe the problem is that these are the apes who are jumping on the bed and you can't have them doing that. And so they had to put them all in cages.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've morally looped it in a good way.
See, that thought I had didn't come from total nowhere. There was a real grounding in the mythology that I'm working with here. But yeah, I guess we should probably head towards the rating section. But is there anything else about this game that you want to talk about? The music is bonkers.
Yeah, the music was really fun. It wasn't trying to be like anything special one way or the other. But I don't know, I thought it was fun.
I think the last thing that I'd like to say is that... It was a huge hit, but for some reason still remains like a kind of an outlier on the system. Like it's definitely part of the iconography of the PlayStation, like those little monkey heads. But I always felt like it was never shoulder to shoulder with games like Crash Bandicoot or Spyro and stuff. But it is such a solid like little gem. But it always did feel like it was on like a lower back shelf from like other hit PlayStation 1 games.
I think the worlds actually are very similar to the Spyro worlds.
Yeah.
But in Spyro, you get to glide and you're a dinosaur. You know, I guess it'd be like if you played as a monkey in Ape Escape.
Yeah. Well,
that might be similar.
That's the thing. You can kind of see in the titles, right? Like you have Spyro, the story about Spyro, the character we can attach it all to is Spyro. Same with Crash Bandicoot. Same with Super Mario. Same with Zelda.
Right, this isn't Spike.
This is about the thing that happens, not the guy. And so there's like less sort of to attach to. You can only attach to these sort of like NPC monkeys.
Yeah, it wouldn't be. Like, yeah, if it was called like Running Dragon or like Breathing Fire, it would probably not do as well.
Right. Well, yeah. Exactly. That's a Spyro called like Breathe Some Fire, or like Crash Bandicoot is called like Find the Apples. Like apples in box.
De-statue the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Or dragons, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's just not quite, it doesn't have a thing to hang on the same way those other games do.
But you could sense that they were trying to like create a franchise with their mini games.
Yeah. Because
you could play the boxing game, you could play the Galaga sort of game, you could play snowboarding. Snowboarding is actually really fun, and it was really cool to like watch because they're like 2D or it's three dimensional, but the characters are 2D and flat. So like when they turn, it almost looks like Paper Mario, sort of like you turn and you see them just like turn into like a line kind of. That was really cool. With the ethics of this game, yeah, you're like capturing monkeys with a butterfly net. And you're just stunning them. You're not really like injuring them. But then in the mini games, you could play as like monkeys boxing. So I guess you're capturing them and then making them fight.
It's very Pokemon.
That's very Pokemon.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one thing to be said is that this game did have a bunch of weird spinoffs. Is worth noting. Like there's Ape Escape Academy, Ape Escape Racer, PlayStation Move Ape Escape. iToy Monkey Mania.
But did any of them do as well as like the original?
No, they didn't. But it's just that they got to keep making them. So there was definitely someone who had some faith in this property for sure.
Yeah, totally. We're still talking about it in 2019.
It's true. Oh, right. I said 2018.
20 years later.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Wow.
That's on the eve of Kingdom Hearts 3. We're still talking about it.
Wow. What a world. Well, let's jump ahead to the part where we rate this game. But before that, let's do a little bit of a commercial break. Hey everyone, it's Lux, and I'm here with Griffin. Hey Griffin.
Hey Griffin. I mean, that's my name.
That is your name.
Sorry guys, I'm a little flustered because, I don't know, like, I've been feeling a little slow lately. Feeling like I'm just not on top of my stuff, you know? I'm getting behind on Game Boys, I haven't been posting as much, and I think I've just got a mental block somewhere in my brain.
Yeah, it can be a tough time. I think we all have sort of moments like that, but you know, I think there's a way you can kind of fix that and get around it if you want. And not just you, but all of our listeners too.
It's called the Peak Point Helmet. It's designed to make your pet monkey smart and then just handle everything for you.
Well, it can also make you smart too, is the thing. It makes anything
weird.
Yeah, you don't have to use it on your monkey. It's weird that you've been doing that.
Oh, okay.
You can use it on anything you want to make them smart. And that's the thing with this Peak Point helmet. You can put it on and go from regular dumb guy to pretty smart guy, or from smart guy to genius, or from monkey to useful assistant.
And I just want to be in the corner of saying intelligence is a burden, and you could just do it to your monkey. Like, you don't have to get smart. Like, that's a lot.
Well, hey, guys, this is Bobo. This is Griffin's pet monkey. He's put a Peak Point helmet on me.
Yep.
Please take it off. I know too much, and it is destroying me on the inside.
But you're so good at my email. You're so good at managing my spam filter.
Yeah, please, the subject lines you write are extraordinary.
Please don't. You just keep making me write subject lines, and I just feel so awful and dehumanized and demonkinized.
Oh, no. Well, it sounds like he's crying, but he's smiling, and he's nodding with a sign that says, keep doing this.
Yeah. So, Peak Point helmet. It's a great tool to make you smarter, make your monkey smarter, and certainly isn't any kind of existential torture. Buy it online at peakpointhelmet.com using the promo code GAMEBOYS to get 10% off.
Bobo, bring me my whip.
Okay.
Hello, Internet. Welcome back to the Game Boys podcast. My name is Lux. I'm still your host. Your co-host is still Griffin Davis. Your guest is still Roger Carno. And we are still talking about Ape Escape. So now is a part of the show where we rate that game, boys and girls and friends beyond the binary. We give this game a score on a scale of 1 to 5 joysticks with a little reasoning behind why we made that choice. Roger, you are our guest, so time and courtesy dictates you go first. What's your score for Ape Escape?
It's a really good game. It's really fun. And I am putting it in the context of like me playing it as a third grader. I'm not even trying to speak nostalgically, but I think based on the experience I had with this game, I got to give it a 4.7.
Whew. Nice.
Good score. Strong score.
That is a good score.
I love a 4.7 because it's a strong score that puts no pressure on either of us to give a 5. what do you think, Griff?
Ooh, man. This game is so solid, and I don't know why I think this game is like an underdog. It has multiple sequels. Millions of people have played it, but it felt like an underdog on the PlayStation for me in terms of these other more iconic character-driven open world games of similar ilk. But, you know, returning to it, reviewing it, hearing the stories, the controls. It's such a great game. And the only thing I don't like about it is just that it pulls you out of the levels. I hate getting pulled out of a level. And it's ultimately what keeps games like Super Mario Sunshine from being a perfect contender as well. Don't pull me out of a level. I'll tell you when I want to leave a level. God damn it. And for that, it's a 4.5 joysticks. For me, it could have gotten so close.
No, Griffin.
They yanked me out.
I appreciate that. But have you considered that when Spike captures the last monkey, every time he goes, yes, does that not give you anything? And then it cuts to the professor's granddaughter Natalie in the lab, and she says great job every time. There's no alternate. She just says great job.
You managed to avoid drowning.
You're right. And now I'm currently, I forgot about that, and I'm updating it to a 4.6.
yeah.
Nice. Okay, here's my thing. I love the yeah, and I love the great job, but I'm with Griffin. I don't like getting pulled out of levels. I also, like I said, don't think the puzzle progression's as cool as it could be. Also, we kind of talk about this, like, I like having a guy. I like there being a guy on the front. I like having a Mario, like in these kind of games, like in these kind of like puzzler platform games. I like having a Mario or a Crash or a Banjo or someone to like sort of superimpose myself onto and feel attached to. And Spike definitely exists. doesn't do a ton else. And that's not like damning by any means, but it does like sort of, it's one less layer of like super fun goofs that I get to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go for it.
Do you think in life you're more of a Spike or a Banjo?
Definitely a Banjo.
Yeah, definitely a Banjo.
Really?
Yeah, he's an ultimate Banjo.
Okay.
I'm a goofy moron.
I kind of identify with Spike in the like anonymity of it. Like, I think I'm a good person and stuff, but like, there's a lot of people out there to think you're a Banjo, like the ego that it takes.
Well, no one's ever said that I'm not grotesquely egotistical. So that checks out.
Okay.
No, but, you know,
I'm like the snake from Banjo-Kazoo that you have to walk lightly around or I'll wake up and chew your head off.
You were to say eat your ass. Hell yeah. It's working. Yeah, no, that's fair. And there is something to Spike. And like, I like protagonists in some games, like the silent, like no one protagonist that you kind of stick yourself on. But like, with these kids games and these goofs, I really like having sort of a character who can bring their own sort of thing to the moment. And doesn't have that. So for me, I think I'll give it a 4.25. It's still a great fucking game and it's super duper fun. It just is missing the sort of like marginal things that make a like iconic platformer stay iconic.
Yeah, we need the hero's journey. And for that, I'm sorry, but the yeah is good. But I'm actually updating my score once more to a 4.4.
Wow.
I want to quickly correct myself as well, but not in my score. I think he actually says yes. It's not a yeah. I think he says yes.
God, and that's why people come to the Game Boys podcast for our insane accuracy. Yeah. All right. Well, that means we've rated this game, which means it's time for everyone's favorite segment, entirely out of segments. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the segment. That's the part where Griffin and I present our guests with weird segments that we have come up with when we play little dumb games. Griffin, you have a segment this week.
Oh, you know, guys, it's another round of two truths and a high. That's right. There's three facts. Two of them are true things about this game. One of them is a fact that I wrote when I was high. And of course, guys, on the eve of Kingdom Hearts, we're doing some Kingdom Hearts facts.
Are we just going to talk about Kingdom Hearts next week?
Oh, no. We're talking about it for the next 2 years.
Oh, great. Cool. 104 episodes.
Oh, my goodness, guys. You know, it's funny coming up with facts about this particular franchise is that a lot of studios, especially Square in Japan, are very tight-lipped about the development stories behind things. So actually, surprisingly, even though there are like 20 games in this franchise, it was really hard to find development stories about this game, but I persevered, guys. So get ready. Fact number one. In Kingdom Hearts 1, Sephiroth is voiced by Lance Bass of the band NSYNC. Fact number two. Squaresoft held a contest before the release of Kingdom Hearts called Kingdom Hearts, Put Your Name in the Game. The winner of this competition would see their name in the game. A man in New York named Kurt was the winner, and he is the second hardest boss in the game. Fact number three. Fans have always been outraged that Ariel from The Little Mermaid was not considered a princess of heart in the original game. The director admits they did this because they felt Ariel was more of a fish than a human.
Okay, now Kurt, Kingdom Hearts 1?
Kingdom Hearts 1.
I feel like Griffin must be, like, there must be a character named Kurt, right? Like,
he is the second hardest boss in the game.
Okay. What was the first one again?
The first one is that Sephiroth is voiced by Lance Bass of the hit band NSYNC.
I believe it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go, I think Kurt's a lie.
You think the Kurt one is Lilux? What do you think, Roger?
Aeris as a princess of hearts?
Ariel is not a princess of heart because the director thought that she was like too much of a fish. Or something.
More fish than human.
I'm going to go with Lux. I think the second one, they all sound like believable.
Yeah, Griffin's really good at this game. It's fucked up.
So you're saying that fact number two, the fact that a man named Kurt won the contest to get his name in a game and that he is the second hardest boss in the game is the lie.
I think that's the high.
Well, gentlemen, you're both wrong. Ugh. That is a real fact. There is a boss, full name Kurt Ziza, which is his full name, and is the second hardest boss. It's an optional boss found outside of Agrabah in the desert. And I never knew why his name was Kurt Ziza. Now I know it's just a dude's name in New York, which is very funny.
Shouts out to Kurt. So what was the high?
Come on the podcast.
Oh, sorry. The high. Yeah, I should.
I would like to know the answer. Yeah.
The answer was that the Ariel was more of a fish than a human. That is not true. It was just clearly a princess snub.
See, That one felt real to me because I feel like we've had other ones where someone's been like, we didn't do this normal thing for crazy reason.
Yeah, like I think it like, yeah, it's maybe it was like a secret one because it's like, you know, the directors maybe misinterpreted lots of Disney stuff.
Yeah, it's like, well, that one's good. That was a good one because it fits a form of lots of the facts you put in this game that are true or that are lies.
Anyways, the most of the other facts were very boring. So
I'm just impressed that you thought, I want to think of a game and I need to find two weird stories about it. Instead of thinking about a game about apes escaping that surely had some weird development stories, we're talking about Kingdom Hearts 3 in advance.
It was actually pretty difficult.
Really? For Ape Escape 2?
Mm-hmm.
Weird. I would have thought that this game was crazy stories. Well, who cares? You did it. That was a great segment. You got me again. My dream of a winning streak is dead and that sucks.
This is a segment where we talk about how well I did on the segment. So if you guys could all give a rating on how that segment went, that'd be nice.
I'm just vamping for a second because I accidentally kicked out my headphones, but they're back in, and now it's time for everybody's favorite game about Analingus. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a riveting round of Do They Eat Ass? It's the game where we discuss whether or not three characters do or do not eat ass, and we decide whether it's through combative conflict or cooperative conversation. The answer to this question this week, the game we're talking about is Ape Escape, so our theme is apes. That means we're going through the big ones: Donkey Kong, King Kong, and Diddy Kong.
Oh, I thought you were gonna do Caesar.
Oh, you don't do Caesar?
No, I'm kidding. Caesar is. Let's keep it to video games.
And King Kong. So yeah, we'll go in alphabetical order as usual. You start with Diddy Kong. Does Diddy Kong eat ass?
Now, Diddy Kong is the younger version of Donkey Kong, correct?
No, Diddy Kong is.
He's not like the younger version.
Yeah, he's just a younger monkey who's friends with Donkey Kong.
Oh, okay, he's just a bro.
Yeah, a young bro.
Diddy Kong probably eats ass most voraciously of those three.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's a little freak. He's like got a little body, but like, I think like little bodies in my mind, like they're like running around, like the little guy is always like the fastest one. Like, I feel like Diddy Kong is faster than Donkey Kong in any of these games.
Oh, for sure.
I think Diddy Kong,
he has a jetpack.
I think based on the jetpack and just based on the frantic way he moves, it's a hard guess for me.
Also, I think that one thing we've learned from Twitter in 2018 is that teens love eating ass, and Diddy Kong is definitely the most teen of the Kong family.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, they're doing all sorts of stuff on Twitter now.
Yeah,
I'm shaking my finger in the corner.
Teens love to eat ass and talk about it on Twitter. That's one thing I learned.
Yeah, Diddy Kong is jetpacking to eat some ass and then immediately tweeting about it.
Yeah, classic Diddy. Now let's talk about Donkey Kong. Does Donkey Kong eat ass? I think we've talked about Donkey Kong before, but we're revisiting Donkey Kong. It's okay to relitigate. Okay.
So my thing about Donkey Kong is I feel like Donkey Kong is such an idiot. I think he might like do things on accident sometimes. and I think he's done it. I don't know like how even conscious he is of anything he does.
Do you think that he is wearing a tie with no shirt because he thinks he put on a shirt and just forgot?
I think he's an empty vessel of a soul. Like I think there's, I look in his eyes and they're dead to me. They're just dead.
Like when Werner Herzog talks about looking into the eyes of a chicken.
Yeah, it's a lot like that. And I mean, and just like a chicken, Donkey Kong has definitely accidentally eaten ass.
All right, Roger, how do you feel about that? That's a pretty wild take. I'm into it.
I think all monkeys eat ass. Like,
yeah, that's also, yeah.
I'm probably going to say yes to all of these. Sorry.
No, totally cool. No, I'm.
Spoiler alert for the third one.
I'm very much about constructing sort of a like taxonomical rubric of like how to tell if something eats ass, and I think all monkeys eat ass is definitely a good rule to add to the system.
Donkey Kong.
And okay, but then here's a question. So we're all gonna say yes for Donkey Kong. I assume we're all gonna say yes for King Kong too, because all monkeys eat ass. So here's a question: all monkeys eat ass. Cops don't eat ass, according to my rules. What about a monkey cop?
I think I think that might be the right Venn diagram for sure.
Yeah. Is it a crooked cop? Or is this like a by the rules monkey cop?
Let's say it's a by the rules monkey cop.
I think anyone that already has like one like solid character noun that then becomes a cop could like definitely infiltrate the system and create all sorts of ripples of change like ass eating.
Yeah, that makes sense. There are a lot of movies about that. And that's how I can tell if a thing makes sense or not, is if there are movies about it. So that checks out.
Let me say this about a monkey cop. Like any iteration of this, I'm constructing in my head, whether it's like, you know, really gritty or like not realistic at all. All of them are adorable. And I would love to see a monkey cop.
Yeah. Monkey cop, the movie. Get at us.
Oh, for sure. Or a game. I would watch the shit or play the shit out of any Monkey Cop stuff.
A Monkey Cop anime would fucking rip. Oh, ooh. I would watch the shit out of that. Except there's definitely some weird pervy shit in it, but that's all right. That happens in every anime. But speaking of things that are all right, Roger, you've been a more than all right guest. You've been fantastic. Thanks, man. And so the people probably want to find more of you on the old internet. So where can they do so?
You could follow my Instagram, which is SlamDip. Slam_dip. It's this crazy narrative I've been doing for a couple of years. I say hop into it. It doesn't matter if you understand it or not. I still think you'll find it funny. Sorry, it's private. It's because I work at a high school and there's like a lot of murder that goes on my Instagram.
Threats of murder.
Do you mean like murdering the libs or what are we talking about here?
No, it's a narrative. I think the closest thing I compare it to is like Twin Peaks, where there's like multiple realities going on and like one of them wants to kill another one. And my guy is like also being tortured by a demon and it has been for a couple of years. I don't like talking about it.
Yeah, you just like doing it. Sometimes some things are so fucked up to explain. It's like, don't make me explain this.
Let me just say this. Here? It's super fucked up and weird.
This shit is very so Joker weird. Twisted, Jared Leto damaged. You're gonna love it.
Let's see. I think youtube.com/lick sketch comedy. I'm a part of
plug.
Lick. At the Pack Theater,
yes.
First Wednesdays of every month at 8 p.m.
Yes, they're very funny. Brand new team. What are you guys, only a few shows in?
Yeah, we're about to have our fourth show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm putting up a video for like with Lick somewhere between February 7th and 12th. Be on the lookout.
Stay tuned.
Gonna be good.
You gotta love those first 6 months of being on a new team because feelings are high, tensions are high. Everyone's high. Everyone's high. It was a fun time. It's good.
All right, Griff Daddy, what's your deal?
Oh man, guys, you know. Screw it. I'm gonna plug a YouTube link today. Guys, go to Dad's New Apartment and subscribe because there's a new video in the pipeline. It's coming very soon to a YouTube near you. And then Game Boys Pod on Instagram and Griffin P. Davis on all the social medias.
All right, well, if we're plugging videos, I'll plug a video too. The Indiegogo video and the subsequent teaser for the next Party World Wrestling show are going to be coming out at the beginning of February. So go on Facebook, look up Party World Wrestling, like the page, and stay tuned for videos.
I would like to plug one more thing.
Okay.
just like over the next week, this comes out in 2 days.
It comes out Wednesday.
I'm just going to be kind of like doing like a live kind of blogging experience about Kingdom Hearts. So feel free to jump in on that.
Yeah, where can people find that?
You can find it on the Game Boys Instagram, but also you can just find me on Facebook if you want. You know, if you're friends with me on Facebook, it'll be there.
Maybe we'll do some shit because I have a pretty light week. Maybe we can do some shit where you play Kingdom Hearts and I watch along and goof with you or something.
We might do some kind of Twitch stream of some sort.
Around with that.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that kind of thing. We'll be posting that.
All right, and speaking of Twitch, my experiment with the wrestling show on Twitch is going well, which means that next Saturday you can go to twitch.tv/partyworldwrestling and see Dark War 2 with live commentary from the wrestlers who were present for Dark War 2, the battle against the robots. And that'll be fun. And hopefully I won't actually be on the stream because I'm not good at it, but we don't usually have enough people. But I think we will next time. So check that out. And please, please, please review the podcast. We've been getting more ratings. We get more ratings on iTunes every week. People aren't writing reviews though. So after you click the 5 stars button, just type in literally any words. It's fine. And we'll read them on the podcast. But reviews and ratings both go into the algorithm. So if you're going to leave us 5 stars, we super duper appreciate it. Thank you super, super much to everyone who's been doing that. Mm-hmm. Also leave a review.
These silent voters though, you know, I do respect the silent majority that were, you know.
Yeah, no, huge respect for the silent voters, but I would love to get some more vocal people in the reviews. So please, if you have a chance, like, we super appreciate everyone who's rated and reviewed so far, but if we can get a couple more, that'd be so awesome. So please do that. And that is it for us. My name is Lux. I'm your host. Your co-host is Griffin Davis. Your guest is Roger Carno. Your editor is Haley Clemen. Your intro and outro music is by Matthew Morden. And your art is by Brittany Metz. Goodbye, internet. We love you very much.
Bye. I love you.
Bye. I love you. Ape Escape.
Ape Escape.
Yes.
Great job.